We just finished reading the first chapter of Krishna book, which is a summary study of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Srila Prabhupada. And the Krishna book runs very close to Srimad Bhagavatam, but Srila Prabhupada also includes more explanations so that we can understand better the context of Srimad Bhagavatam and the philosophical concepts. But at the end of the first chapter of Srila Prabhupada's translation of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he includes some elaborate notes which are very interesting. And I will read from those, because these are very deep topics, extremely deep topics that we're discussing. So, additional notes for this chapter. Now, there was an incident when Kamsa heard the prophecy from the sky that the aged child of Devaki would kill him, and he became infuriated and was ready. He grabbed Devaki by the hair and drew his sword. He was ready to murder his own sister on the day of her wedding. And Vasudeva, to try to pacify Kamsa, spoke to him about the transmigration of the soul. That why are you so upset with the thought that you will have to die? Because you will have to die anyway, sooner or later. But you, the soul, will not die. Simply you will change the body. Regarding transmigration of the soul, Srila Madhvacharya gives the following notes. When one is awake, whatever one sees or hears is impressed upon the mind, which later works in dreams to show one different experiences. Although in dreams one appears to accept a different body. For example,
at the end, last part of the chapter, end note.
For example, when one is awake, one does business and talks with customers. And similarly, in dreams, one meets various customers, talks about business, and gives quotations. Madhvacharya says, therefore, that dreams take place according to what one sees, hears, and remembers. When one reawakens, of course, one forgets the body of the dream. This forgetfulness is called apasmriti. Thus we are changing bodies because we are sometimes dreaming, sometimes awake, and sometimes forgetful. Forgetfulness of our previously created body is called death, and our work in the present body is called life. After death, one cannot remember the activities of one's previous body, whether imaginary or factual. So there's a discussion about the transmigration of the soul. Then there's another discussion about the word ansa, which generally means portion. So these are the notes on Amsa. This chapter describes that Krishna appears Amsena with his parts and parcels, or his partial manifestation. In this connection, Sridhar Swami says that Krishna is 100% Bhagavan, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Because of our imperfections, however, we cannot appreciate Krishna in fullness. And therefore, whatever Krishna exhibited when present on earth was but a partial manifestation of his opulence. Again, Krishna appeared with his plenary expansion, Baladev. Krishna, however, is full. There is no question of his appearing partially. In the Vaishnav Toshini, Srila Sanatana Goswami says that to accept that Krishna was partially manifested would contradict the statement Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Srila Jiva Goswami says that the word Amsena means that Krishna appeared with all his plenary expansions. The word Amsena, Vishnu, does not mean that Krishna is a partial representative of Vishnu. Rather, Krishna appeared in fullness and he manifests himself partially in the Vaikuntha Lokas. In other words, Lord Vishnu is a partial representation of Krishna. Krishna is not a partial representation of Vishnu. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 4, this subject matter is explained very clearly. Now, it's a common idea amongst Hindus that Vishnu is the origin and he assumes different forms, dasavatar, and Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu, but that Vishnu is the supreme. And Srila Jiva Goswami discusses this point elaborately, as quoted by Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 4, that because the general procedure is for the incarnations or descents of the Lord to appear through Vishnu, even though Krishna is the origin of Vishnu, he observes that etiquette and he respects the position of Vishnu within the material world. And he also comes into the material world through Vishnu. But still, Vishnu is an expansion of Krishna. Krishna is the origin of Vishnu. And as Srila Prabhupada mentioned, Krishna is 100% God. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami enumerates 64 qualities of Krishna. Of course, Krishna's qualities are unlimited. But still, for our benefit, he enumerates 64 qualities. And four of these qualities are possessed by Krishna alone. Not even Vishnu possesses them. And they are related to what we discussed earlier, that the real purpose for Krishna's descent is to display his pastimes in Vrindavan, in his original form of Krishna. All of the other functions, protecting the devotees, annihilating the miscreants and establishing the principles of religion can be done by Vishnu. But the one thing that Vishnu cannot do, which Krishna can do, is to manifest Krishna Leela in Vrindavan. So Srila Rupa Goswami explains that out of the 64 qualities, there are four qualities that Krishna alone possesses and that even Vishnu does not possess. So can any of you tell me one? We'll begin with one of those qualities. Yes, Ramananda Sakha.
One of them is that he possesses exquisite beauty that is unparalleled by anyone throughout the material and spiritual worlds.
Yes, Krishna's super excellent beauty, Rupa Madhurya, so beautiful that even Lakshmi wants to leave Narayan in order to obtain Krishna. And there is a very interesting discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Venkata Bhatta when Lord Chaitanya visited the Sri Rangam in South India. And Venkata Bhatta had that conception that actually Vishnu is supreme. And he was thinking that my Lord enjoys such divine opulences in Vaikuntha, and your Lord is just running around barefoot in the jungles, and his only decorations are forest flowers. And so Lord Chaitanya very intelligently replied that if that is true, then why is it that Lakshmi, who is the most chaste woman in the universe and is completely dedicated to her husband Narayan, was ready to give up her chastity in order to attain the favor of Krishna? And Mahaprabhu quoted some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. And Venkata Bhatta didn't know what to answer, because it's true, the Bhagavatam says that Lakshmi underwent great austerities to get the favor of Krishna, but even then she could not enter the rasa dance. And so Venkata Bhatta had no answer, and he asked Lord Chaitanya, "You should answer." And then to sort of relieve Venkata Bhatta, he said that, well, actually she wasn't being unchaste to Lord Narayan, because ultimately Narayan and Krishna are the same. In tattva or in siddhanta, they are the same. But in rasa, there is a difference. So Krishna came to manifest that rasa in Vrindavan. And yes, he manifested such extraordinary beauty that even Lakshmi, the eternal consort of Narayan, wanted to join his pastimes in Vrindavan. A second of the four. Yes, Shradadevi Dasi.
And the flutes.
Yes, his flute playing. Now, there are many people in the material world, we play the flute. So Krishna's flute playing is in a different category. His flute playing, from the musical perspective, bewilders even Lord Brahma. Sometimes devotees, they like new melodies in kirtan because they're like tired of the old ones, so they want some new melody. Because after hearing a certain melody, simple melody, okay, I got it, I know this. And then a new melody, it's hard at first, but after a while, oh, I got this, I got this one figured out, and then they need another new melody. So Lord Brahma, the most intelligent being in the universe, he's so intelligent he could engineer the creation of the whole universe and everything in it. He could not wrap his mind around the melodies of Krishna's flute. In other words, he's the creator of everything in the universe. That includes all the musical notes. But he could not fathom the melody of Krishna's flute. So it is completely transcendental, beyond the material creation. But Krishna's flute is also a messenger. Rupa Goswami explains that Krishna has various messengers who deliver messages for him. And one of his messengers is the flute. So when Krishna wants the cows to come back, he plays his flute, and he's actually calling them by their names. And when he plays his flute to call the gopis, yes, they're hearing the music of the flute, but that music is embedded with a message that, you know, please come to me. It's a message. And sometimes also our speech or chanting can be embedded with a message. For example, when we chant the holy names, when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, as Srila Prabhupada says, our chanting should be like the genuine cry of a child for its mother. That should be our mood. But we can chant with a different mood. Like, sometimes I give this example. If you go to Loy Bazaar in Vrindavan, how many of you have been to Loy Bazaar? We're talking about Vrindavan. So Srila Prabhupada said, you won't find Krishna loitering in Loy Bazaar, which has two meanings. One is, you won't find that he's loitering in Loy Bazaar. And the other meaning is, if you're loitering in Loy Bazaar, you won't find Krishna. So there are many merchants in Loy Bazaar, and they'll see the devotees on the road, and they'll say, Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna Prabhu, come, 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 Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So what is that Hare Krishna? Is that the genuine cry of a child for its mother? What is he actually saying? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. What he's really saying is, Bottom line, I want your money. That's really what he's saying. So with his mouth, he's saying, Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Come, come see Prabhupada, Prabhupada. He's saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But within his heart, he's thinking, oh, here's a customer, potential customer. Let me lure him into my shop. Let me sell him some goods and I'll make some profit. So this is, you know, Krishna's the origin. So everything that exists in Krishna and in the spiritual world exists in the material world. So Krishna, just like we have conscious or unconscious messages embedded in our speech, our chanting, even the way we look, the way we walk. So Krishna, when he plays his flute, he sends out a very beautiful message that please, please come. I want to meet. Okay, so we have two of... Yes?
A very sweet childhood pastimes of Krishna.
Yes. So we had Rupa Madhurya, who's extraordinarily beautiful, and Venu Madhurya, the sweet flute playing, and Leela Madhurya, his very sweet pastime. And these pastimes in Vrindavan are unlike any other pastimes of any other incarnation, because there is so much sweetness, so much intimacy, that Krishna becomes the son of Mother Yashoda, Nanda Baba, and they, he becomes subservient to them, to their love. As Srila Prabhupada says that in other concepts, God is the Father, and the duty of the Father is to provide for the children. In other words, the children take service from the Father. So when a devotee prays to God the Father, a worshiper prays to God the Father, give us this day our daily bread, or whatever, he's taking service from the Father. But when the devotee accepts Krishna as his son, then he's giving service to Krishna. And there's a very beautiful... Well, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is beautiful, but there's a very beautiful time when Krishna leaves Vrindavan and goes to Mathura. As we heard, Vasudeva, when he was trying to pass by Kamsa, he was thinking that at least if I save Devaki, I may have a son who can kill Kamsa. So Krishna went to Vrindavan. He went to Mathura and he killed Kamsa. So Vasudeva and Devaki wanted that Krishna should stay with them for some time. Now, Nanda and Yashoda knew that Balaram was not their son. They knew that he was the son of Rohini, and Rohini was one of the wives of Vasudeva. But Krishna, they didn't have any idea that he was not their son. So there are many very intricate discussions between Krishna and Balaram and Vasudeva and Devaki and Nanda Maharaj, in which they discuss who is the real mother, who is the real father, and the debt of the children to the parents. So although Krishna is supplying the needs of everyone, but he feels that he's indebted to his parents for providing for him. And then there's this very intricate discussion that, okay, well, Balaram's the son of Vasudev, so, well, we have to let him stay, but we don't have to let Krishna stay. But then Balaram said, this is in the Bhagavatam, but a lot comes out from the commentaries. And Balaram said, you know, because there's this thing, who is the real mother and father? The real mother and father are the ones who raise the child and protect the child and nurture the child. So he was saying, how can I stay with this other parent who I don't even know? And then if you take Krishna with you back to Vrindavan and leave me all alone here, how will I survive? I'll die. I can't. So then it was sort of settled that Nanda would also be Krishna. And there's so many pastimes, but the idea is that these types of feelings are impossible with any other form of the Lord. These wonderful childhood pastimes, and then, So yes, we have three now. So what is the fourth? I could call on you, but we'll see if anyone else. Yes?
Give the microphone.
He's always surrounded by his devotees, his accompanied by his devotees who are engaged in loving service to him.
Yes. He has devotees who are have a superlative degree of love for him, and that refers to these, like we said, the Siddhanta is of Narayana and Krishna is the same, the Tattva is the same, but the Rasa is different. So they can love Krishna in these very intimate relationships of friends, like equals or parents and lovers, so that the Lord actually becomes subordinate to their love. So I'll conclude with one little story about. So when we were in Calcutta with Srila Prabhupada, and we were new in India. And so one of our devotees, Achyutananda Swami, met the landlord, Mr. Singh Roy. And Mr. Singh Roy had his own theories. Many people do have their own theories of spiritual life. And Mr. Singh Roy was one of them. And so he told Achyutananda that that actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the origin, and that from him comes Krishna, Radha and Krishna, and that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is greater than Radha and Krishna, because just like milk and sugar, Rasgulla is greater than milk and sugar. Anyway, he had his theories. So Achyutananda, you know, came into Srila Prabhupada's room, and you know, he wanted to clarify these points, and I happened to be there. So he said, you know, Mr. Singh Roy is saying that, you know, he repeated what I just told you. And so he's saying that that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes first. And Srila Prabhupada said, no. You know, by his own example, milk and sugar come first, and then the milk and sugar combine and they produce the rasagula. So actually Radha and Krishna come first. And then Achyutananda Swami asks, well, who's greater? Prabhupada paused for a moment and looked down. And then he pointed to a picture on the wall, which showed it's a Banerjee, I think it's a good, anyway. So it showed Radharani on a little higher platform, and Krishna's sort of like kneeling and, you know, praying to her for favor. So Srila Prabhupada said, Radharani is the greatest, because Krishna is kneeling down to her and, you know, asking her to whatever forgive him. And then he pointed to another picture, which showed Krishna carrying Nanda Maharaj's sandals on his head. I was happy to see that in our audiovisual, well, not audiovisual, visual display. Then he said, Nanda Maharaj is the greatest, because Krishna is carrying his slippers on his head. And then Srila Prabhupada said that the devotee is the greatest, because Krishna becomes subordinate to his devotee's love. So this is a general principle, but it is manifested to the supreme degree with his devotees in Vrindavan. And therefore that is fourth opulence of Krishna that even Lord Narayan does not possess, being surrounded by so many beautiful, wonderful devotees. So where would we be if Krishna never descended? We would I don't even want to speculate on where we would be, but even if we weren't there, probably at most we might be worshipping Lakshmi Narayan or even Sitaram, which is still wonderful, it's all wonderful. But this special gift, which is the real reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us this gift of Raja Bhakti, this is the special reason for Lord Krishna's descent. So thank you. You all answered all the questions. We'll just see if there's anything else here. I mean, there's so much. I mean, there are notes on so many of these points, you know, elaborate notes. Nivrittatarshai, one who has no material desires. Pashuganat, animal killer, we discussed that. So there's like a page for every word. This is one I actually wanted to find for myself. Means I wanted to understand for my own benefit. Because hearing the pastimes, when I heard that, you know, Vasudeva delivered the first son to Kamsa, and Kamsa became compassionate toward him and delivered the son back to him and said, anyway, the prediction was only that the eighth child would kill me, so I have nothing to fear from the first one, so you can take him back. So when I was hearing that, I was thinking, you know, this is nice. You know, even Kamsa is such a terrible tyrant, but even he, you know, he was melted by Vasudeva's virtuousness, and he gave the sun back, and now they can at least enjoy their sun. And then Narada came and sort of like instigated Kamsa. So I was thinking, like, why did he do that? I mean, things were getting better, and he came and he sort of like stirred things up to make things worse. And you know, what is this? You know, what is this? So Srila Prabhupada discusses this point in these notes. And it's interesting because there's, although by and large it's really a special feature of Srimad Bhagavatam, even though there's 18,000 verses, but there's no controversy about the verses. It's pretty clear. But it appears that there's an alternate version of Srimad Bhagavatam that has another verse. And so Srila Prabhupada quotes that verse in the end notes, and he discusses, and it comes back to that point. So an additional verse in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is accepted by the Madhvacharya Sampradaya, represented by the Dayadwaj Tirtha. The verse is as follows. Ata kamsam upagamya narado brahma nandana ekantam upasangamya bhagyareta dubachaha. Translation. Thereafter, Narada, the mental son of Lord Brahma, approached Kamsa and in a very solitary place informed him of the following news. And we already heard what Narada told him, that the demigods had taken birth in these different families and you should be careful. So Srila Prabhupada says, the great Saint Narada descended from the heavenly planets to the forest of Mathura and sent his messenger to Kamsa. When the messenger approached Kamsa and informed him of Narada's arrival, Kamsa, the leader of the Asuras, was very happy and immediately came out of his palace to receive Narada, who was as bright as the sun, as powerful as fire, and free from all tinges of sinful activities. Kamsa accepted Narada as his guest, offered him respectful obeisances, and gave him a golden seat, brilliant like the sun. Narada was a friend of the King of Heaven, and thus he told Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, my dear hero, you have satisfied me with a proper reception, and therefore I shall tell you something secret and confidential. While I was coming here from Nandakanana through the Chaitraratha forest, I saw a great meeting of the demigods who followed me to Sumeru Parvat. We traveled through many holy places and finally saw the holy Ganges. While Lord Brahma was consulting the other demigods at the top of Sumeru Hill, I was also present with my stringed instrument, the Veena. I shall tell you confidentially that the meeting was held just to plan to kill the Asuras, headed by you. Now this is pretty heavy. Pretty heavy. You have a younger sister named Devaki, and it is a fact that her eighth son will kill you. And the reference for this is the Hari Vamsa Vishnu Parva, texts 1:2-16. Now here Srila Prabhupada addresses my doubt. No one can blame Naradaji for encouraging Kamsa to kill the sons of Devaki. The Saint Narada is always a well-wisher for human society, and he wanted the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, to descend to this world as soon as possible, so that the society of demigods would be pleased and would see Kamsa and his friends killed by Krishna. Kamsa would also attain salvation from his nefarious activities. And this too would very much please the demigods and their followers. So there's a very important point here that all of us face in life. And that is that sometimes things happen which we think are bad. And we may revolt against them. But we don't actually know whether they're good or bad. Sometimes something that seems to be bad actually turns out to be good. But because of our limited perception and our limited knowledge and our limited wisdom, we take it as bad. And we fight it. We fight it, or we blame people for doing something bad. And, you know, one could have that thought about Narada, like blaming him for giving this information to Kamsa. So, Yes.
Was Narada the voice that came from his side, or was that somebody else, and who was that?
Well, we don't have any information as to whom.
But it wasn't Narada.
There's no such statement that it was Narada. No. That's a good thought. We can look into it. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection that Narada Muni sometimes did things that were beneficial to the demigods and the demons simultaneously. I mean, in the material world, it's quite common. One party wins and the other party loses. I mean, that's the whole principle of sports events and many other fields of materialistic endeavor. But the Vaishnavas, like Narada Muni, they act for the benefit even of opposing parties. It's not that one wins and the other loses, but they actually both benefit. And this is the spiritual platform as opposed to the material platform. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection that Narada Muni sometimes did things that were beneficial to the demigods and the demons simultaneously. Jivira Raghava Acharya, in his commentary, has included the following half-verse in this regard. Asura Sarva Evaita Loko Padravya Karina. Asuras are always disturbing elements for human society. So on this point that we don't always know what's best for us, of course, a common example pertains to our wealth. Generally, if we lose our wealth, we think it's bad. And if we gain wealth, we think it's good. And that it can be true. But Srila Prabhupada, he was very, he was a successful businessman, but then somehow things changed and everything went wrong in his business. And then while reading the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he came across Krishna's statement, Yasyaham Anugranami Harishye Taddanam Shanai. Krishna says that when he's especially favorably inclined to a sincere devotee, he takes away his material opulence. Because if someone is sincere but at the same time has some material attachment that is an impediment to his devotional service and he's not able to give it up on his own, Krishna may show him special mercy and take it away. Now, before speaking, I asked Vaisheshika Prabhu if I should address the devotees who are sitting here or the ones who are passing through. And he said I should address the devotees who are sitting here. Because the ones who are passing through, if they hear this, they might not come back. If they hear that Krishna's special mercy, well, I won't even say it again. But I'll just finish this. So Srila Prabhupada felt, so when Prabhupada was having these difficulties with his business, and he came across this verse, he was thinking, maybe this is what's happening to me. And actually, as he describes it, you know, it was Krishna's special favor to free him to fully take up the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there's another story that makes it more on a commonplace platform. And this, it's about a farmer. And I think it was like that. He had two horses, and one of the horses escaped somehow. So his son went. Oh yeah. So then all the neighbors came and said, "Oh, how terrible! You know, you lost one of your horses." And the farmer, wise farmer, said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." So then his son went out to find that missing horse. And while he was out in the jungle, he found two horses. Not the same one, but he found two other horses and he brought them back. So all the neighbors said, "Oh, how wonderful. You know, you lost one horse, but now you have two." He said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." So one of those horses was a little wild. So his son was trying to break him in, you know, like tame that horse, train that horse. And while he was trying to break in the horse threw him. And he fell down and he broke his leg. So all the neighbors came running, "Oh, we heard your son has broken his leg. How horrible." And the farmer said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." So then the king's soldiers came, and they were looking to recruit the son into the army. But they saw, "Oh, his leg is broken. We can't take him." So they left him. Then all the neighbors came and said, "Oh, how wonderful. the army was coming to draft your son, but because of his broken leg, they didn't take him. How wonderful." And what did the farmer say? So, and the story goes on like that. I don't remember beyond that. But this is something that we can do. You know, when we have that impulse, "Oh, this is horrible," we can check it. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. It happened to me once. I gave this example in a class. And it does happen. That's another reason why it's good to preach. It does happen that very soon after you give an instruction in class, you're tested on the same instruction. So very, very soon, you know, I gave that talk maybe in Dallas somewhere, and then I went to the airport, and I think whatever it was, the flight was delayed, and I thought, "Oh, how horrible." And then I thought, "Maybe yes, maybe no." I checked myself. And then they were offering $250 for people who voluntarily. Oh, maybe it was overbooked. But anyway, "Oh, that's great. I can get a $250 credit with the airline." But maybe yes, maybe no. So yeah, ultimately we should just surrender to Krishna. He knows best, Father knows best. And that's why some devotees pray, like King Prithu prayed, that because in his case the Lord was offering him some material reward. And Prithu Maharaj thought, this may not actually be good for me. I might be tempted away from the path of pure devotional service. And then he made this very nice prayer to the Lord that, I do not know what is good for me or bad for me. You know what is best for me. So just as a father does what's best for the child without being asked by the child, so you kind of do whatever is best for me without my asking, because I don't know. So that's our position in our conditioned side of life. Spiritual side of life, we do know what's best. I mean, we've been told what's best, and we know that that's best. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. And chant, dance, feast, distribute books. Hare Krishna. So there was a hand that went up, but I don't. I think the hand and the body that was attached to it both left. Oh, back, they're back, they're both back.
No. What is that lady? No, I kind of partly answered my question, but I still want to ask Maharaj. How is it that, anyway, demons are disturbing elements? So why so keen on doing good for both of them? Because even though Krishna kills Kamsa and then Kamsa got liberated, that may not be good in, from his perspective, right? So how do we understand and why do they do that?
Yeah, I mean, the demon especially may not understand what's good for him. But the Vaishnava knows. There are so many instances where Narada cursed someone, but the curse was actually for their benefit. Can you think of an example?
Arjuna tree?
Yes. Nalakuvera and Manigriva. They were naked in the water with enjoying with ladies, intoxicated by the wealth of their father, Kuvera. And Narada came by, and the ladies at least had some shame, and they, you know, they covered themselves. But these two brothers, they were so intoxicated with their opulence that they had no shame. So Narada cursed them to take birth as trees. And because trees, they like to stand naked. And they may think they're very beautiful. Some trees are very beautiful. I mean, if a property has beautiful trees, it enhances the value of the property. So, but it was a curse. But then ultimately it was a blessing because they got to see Krishna, and you know that story. So that's, yeah, so.
So another question, Maharaj, related to what we discussed early in the morning and also what we read. We talked about Vaisheshika Prabhu saying how we should not chant considering it a destructive activity, one of the offenses. And also we also see even after the demigods, they chanted the Purusha Shukta prayers, and it's so powerful that Krishna appears before them. But the dealing that they have with Krishna is very transactional. can you do this for me, can you do that for me, but it's not transformational because they don't transform and the heart doesn't change by that type of transactional fruitive mentality. So even if demigods are like that, I'm just thinking, because even in our day-to-day activity, it's almost, it appears to be transactional. So when will it become really like you do it to please Krishna?
Well, what really matters is the consciousness. And suppose Bhumi is feeling the burden of these demonic kings, and these demonic kings are creating a disturbing situation, especially for devotees. And so her asking Lord Brahma to alleviate the situation, then he's approaching Vishnu. It doesn't necessarily mean selfish. I mean, in a somewhat comparable situation, but in a different context, Advaitacharya and Srivast Thakur and the devotees in Navadvip, they were also lamenting about the materialistic condition of society. And they prayed that Krishna comes. But their prayer, and yes, it's true that they were happy personally when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, but they were praying for him to come for the benefit of the welfare of the people. So I think that was the mood of Bhumi and Lord Brahma and the other demigods. You know, it's like, say, you have some service in the temple and there's some obstacle to your service. So you approach Vaisheshika Prabhu or Nirvikula Mataji and, you know, I'm facing this difficulty, you know, can you help me? So that's for service, you know. And, you know, Vaisheshika Prabhu and Nirvikula Mataji, they're concerned with the welfare of the project, they're concerned with your welfare, concerned with the welfare of all living entities. So
it's really, what a nice point. And now if you want to pray, just you can ask for something, but it's just why you ask, it's what determines whether it's a fruitive activity or a devotional activity.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna, the four exclusive qualities of Krishna were simply nectar, and I personally always thought, even when I was there, especially when my granny used to pray to Krishna, that only Krishna is that we can say, my Krishna, my Lord Krishna. With no other God, you can say, oh, my Durga, or my Vishnu. So that personal relationship only establishes with Krishna. So in that, so I understand there's Rupa Madhurya, the Venu Madhurya, and Leela Madhurya. What's the name of the fourth Madhurya? There is a name at all.
There is.
Okay.
I remember. We can find that out. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Okay. Thank you very much.
But that's true. That's a very I mean, it's very nice, especially for us if we think I am Krishna's. But Krishna's mind, that's even higher. But we can't. First, we have to think I am Krishna's, and then when we're really Krishna's, then we can think Krishna's mind.